Okay, we're up to Daniel Perek Hey. Let's review Pasuk Hey one more time. We're in the middle of the story of Belshazzar. Belshazzar is either the son or the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. We were learning yesterday according to Rashi, and that's really the simple interpretation of the Pesukim as we learned yesterday, and we'll see again today a few times he's referred to as the son of Nebuchadnezzar. If he was the son, that means that he was the brother of his predecessor, Evel Merodach. He made a party. We learned yesterday Rashi and the Medrash. The party was to celebrate their success in overcoming Madai, the nation of Madai, who was at war with Bavel. And he believed that they had prevailed and they had weakened Madai to the degree, to the point where no longer would they pose a threat to Bavel. So Belshazzar was celebrating in his palace. And according to the Medrash, the celebration was primarily to celebrate the fact that 70 years of Yirmiyah's prophecy that the Jewish people will be in exile for 70 years have passed and nothing has happened. There's no remez, there's no hint that there's any redemption on the way. And that's an indication that Hashem has rescinded his prophecy, his message, his will to redeem his people, or that there never was such a prophecy. Then there's no hope for this. So he was celebrating the doom of the Jewish people, what his father or grandfather had succeeded in doing in conquering them and destroying the Beit HaMikdash and sending them into exile. And it appears this point in time there's a lot of assimilation. And now we're going to see very clearly in Sefer and Nehemiah and Ezra, when they did come back at the time of the Bayis Sheni, to build the Bayis Sheni, there was terrible, terrible assimilation. And that was one of his major messages and work, and the major effort on behalf of Ezra was to tell the Jewish people to divorce their non-Jewish wives and get back on track. But at this point during the party, suddenly a hand came out of heaven and began to write a message on the wall. Pasuk Hey Bei Shata, at that moment in time, Nefaka Etzba'on Di Enosh, the fingers of a human hand came out of Chosfon and wrote a message, Lekavel opposite Nevrashta. Okay, well, Nevrashta simply means the menorah, the candelabra. We'll discuss that in a moment. Pasuke, Perike, Pasuke. Perike, Pasuke, Algira. The words were written on chalk, which means a white background. It was clear, black text on a white background. Could not get better than this. Di chesal hechla, of the wall of his palace, the malka of the king, umalka chaze, the king. In addition, everyone else saw the letters. They saw the actual letters appearing on the wall, but the king Belshazzar, he saw something different. He also was revealed to him the actual hand. Umalka chaze, he saw pasyuda, the palm of a hand, di chosva, as it was writing the letters on the wall. He asked all of his servants, do you see the hand? And all of the servants said, no, all we see are letters appearing on the wall. We don't see the actual hand writing the letters. Maybe they saw the fingers, but they did not see the actual palm. And he kept on asking his servants, and they told him, we don't know what you're talking about. And then Belshazzar came to realize that the fact that he is seeing something that they are not seeing, he sees the actual palm, the pasyuda, whereas they do not see the pasyuda. This is an indication that the message is specifically meant for him. For him, more so than anyone else in the palace, anyone else in the Malchus. Uh-huh. If he sees it and no one else sees it, that means it's a message for you. And that's why he was all the more disturbed. He was terrified because he could not decipher the significance of the message that was directed directly, that was meant directly for him. Belshazzar. No Avram here. Belshazzar. Pasuk Vav. Edayin then Malka, at that point in time, the king Ziyoine Shino, his countenance, his facial features changed. He was terrified. He was unrecognizable. His face changed. Ziyoi, because Ziyoi means his appearance. His appearance, Shinohi, Lashon of Shinu, it changed. Virayonohi, his thoughts, Yizahalune, terrified him. He lost his mind. He went crazy. He could not think straight. He was so scared. He realized his mazel, his inner soul sensed that something is really, really wrong. And indeed, he died that night. He was killed. That this appears to have taken place during the day, if I'm not mistaken. Look at the Midrashim, and he died that evening, or maybe this took place towards the late afternoon when it was getting dark.
What was written on the wall?
Oh, we're going to come to that. Pasuk Chafei. Well, I'm going to wait to go through exactly what was written, because it spells it out in the Pasuk. Pasuk Chafei says it, and the Mitzudos really, when the Mitzudos very carefully translates them exactly what it says and what's going on. So I want to just wait until we get there instead of spending the time on it now. But his thoughts, O he who's terrified, the kitre, here's a difficult expression, the kitre charitzei mishtorayin. Mishtorayin means to untie, to loosen, to untie. Charitzei means his loins, the upper part of his legs. Kitre means the knots. So what does this mean? It can mean simply one of two things. Either it was their custom to wear belts. They wore these very elaborate belts, sashes, along their waist. And it girded them, it kept them, it was very tight. And that was the custom. And when a person was not feeling well, when he was terrified, the first thing you do is you loosen up all of, you loosen your belt. Not because you're eating, you know, he's not over here, he wasn't eating, he was just in state of terror. So he felt uneasy, and he opened up his belts. Seems like he had an elaborate collection of belts. We're not familiar with the way the kings, the Babylonian kings dressed. And you look at some of these pictures from ancient times, you do see that they had different belts, different color belts, different types of garments that were worn at war when they went to battle. But whatever it was, he had some type of belt, and the belt had different knots, and now he was not feeling well, and he was terrified. So the terror caused him to loosen the knots, the bands of these belts which wrapped his loins. So one more time, the kitre, the knots, chartzei of his loins, mishtarin, were loosened. That's one interpretation. Another interpretation means he could not control his bowel movements. We have this in Megillas Esther, v'tischalchal hamalka me'od. Esther was terrified when she had to go to Achashverosh and everything, all of the harvest were unfolding. So Chazal say she parsa nida. She became a nida. She could not control. There was a change in her body, and that caused things that it was not her time when she would expect to have a period. But due to the terror, it caused the shock. It caused her body the cycle to change, and therefore she became a nida. Chazal, in fact, they say this, that any emotional change can cause a woman to become a nida. For example, when a woman gets engaged, let's say the woman gets engaged and she wants, the Gemara talks about this, and she wants to, they want to get an emergency wedding. She gets engaged on Sunday and they decide, you know what, let's get married Monday. And as far as she knows, I mean, today, I don't know all the details, but there has to be this long process of a preparation for a woman who should not be in nida, have sektar and all the whole long process, especially for a kala. But let's say for whatever reason she was careful. Let's say she was married before, or she's Nizrael, Atar Sakodesh, Mizban, Shabes, Hamikdash Kayim, then all girls were very careful from puberty to make sure that they're not needles because they would contaminate food in the home. So she gets engaged Sunday. She wants to get married Monday. No, she cannot get married Monday because we're choishesh that she is a nida. Oh, but she doesn't have any sensation. She doesn't necessarily detect that she's a nida. The emotional high of getting engaged, that's a life-changing experience, once-in-a-lifetime experience, she got engaged, that emotional change can cause her to be poiris nida, even though she may not even be aware. And we find in the more extreme form, the other way, not in a high of emotion, emotional high, but an emotional low of Vatischalchal Hamalkom Od, in a state of terror. So here as well, Nebuchadnezzar was in a state of terror, and therefore his bowels opened. It's an expression here, it's Lashon, it's an expression here, a delicate expression, that he could not control his bowel movements. He was giving out waste in front of everyone there in front of the palace. The Kidre Chartse Mishtorayin, he lost control over his bowels. The knots of the inside of his loins were loosened, and the waste just flowed out. And then it says, "V'arku vosei do ledo nokshan." This expression is quoted in Chazal often. His knees banged one against the other. When a person is in a state of terror, your knees bang against each other. That's do do ledo means one to the other. Nokshan means to bang, and "V'arku vosei" means his knees. So he was obviously, this pasuk over here really, really expresses in a very great degree the state of terror that Belshazzar found himself in when he saw the handwriting on the wall and was unable to decipher its meaning. Contrast this, I don't know, I'm just throwing this out, I have no idea the significance, but contrast this to when Yitzchak Avinu, when he was terrified, when he realized that he gave the brachos to Yaakov and not to Esav, Vayechrad Yitzchak Charada Gedola Ad Me'od. So what is Charada? The Targum there says it means he shook. His whole body shook. Here, Belshazzar was terrified. Different type of terror. And it says that, Kidri Chartse Mishtorayin V'yarku Vosei Dolodo Nokshan. These two states of terror have to be compared and understood. I don't know the significance, but they're obviously going different extremes. The Tzaddik Yisoyed Olam Yitzchak Avinu Oyla Tamima, he gave brachas to Yaakov. The whole Nitzchis of Klal Yisrael here is on the line. It was Miyad Hashem, so also his mazel certainly had a certain sense, forget about his conscious awareness of what has taken place, that he gave the brachas to a person who he did not expect to give the brachas to, but he obviously realized Gam Baruch Yehiyah, he said that what he's done was done to the Yad Hashem. There certainly was a mazel, and he was still terrified. But the way he was terrified was described that his whole body shook, not just the knees. Vayechrad Yitzchak, his essence shook. And there's no mention of waste. There's no mention that he lost control over his bowels. There's no such thing concept. Here, with a Rasha, Belshazzar is considered to be from the big time Rishoyim, as we learned yesterday in the Medrash that compares Belshazzar to Nebuchadnezzar. It's one continuous hemshuch of wickedness. It's different. It says here, what shook? Not his essence. It doesn't say that Belshazzar shook. His knees shook. What's the significance of the knees? It's the support of his body. I don't know. It has to be discussed. And what else? Waste. Waste. That's a davar ma'os. Something disgusting is the result of the terror. Okay, I just want to point that out, that contrast. There are a lot of contrasts. Obviously, David Daniel, you can contrast Daniel with Avraham Avinu, with Daniel being thrown. Daniel, we didn't discuss this, but obviously it has to be understood that Daniel was thrown into the Kivshan, not Daniel, Hananya, Mishael, Azariah, thrown into the Kivshan Ha'esh here in Bavel. And who was the first one to be thrown into the Kivshan Ha'esh in Ur Kasdim, this week's parasha? Avram and Haran. Avram and his brother. Avram survived, Haran did not survive. Same place, right? It was the same location, same region, same what?
Same organ.
Same oven. Like, I don't. Doesn't. We don't know. There are details that are hidden from us, that are not important for us to know. But who knows? I mean, it's a point. Okay, so there are a lot of parallels. See, unfortunately, we don't read Ksuvim as part of the Haftarah. If in the Neviim, what are we learning for the Haftarah? Neviim. So we discussed this in our section on the Minog about Haftarah. One of the meanings of Haftarah is Peter. Have to open up. What is the Haftarah opening up? So one interpretation we gave is it opens up a new understanding into the parsha. When you have a Haftarah, and the theme of the Haftarah is similar to the theme of the parsha, when we two stories, very similar, and you read one story, it triggers a process of thought which opens up, Peter opens up a whole new perspective in the parsha. Unfortunately, we don't lay Ksuvim as the Haftarah. If we would lay Ksuvim as the Haftarah, you can bet that what would be the Haftarah for Bereishis, for Parashas Lech Lecha or Kastin, it would be Chananim Shel Azariah, and so on and so forth. As we also did mention that there really was a Haftarah of Ksuvim, Mincha. We discussed this, that they used to lay Torah, Nevim, and Ksuvim, and Shabbos Mincha is when they read Ksuvim. There are three parts to Torah. Torah, they lay in the morning, Haftarah Nevi'im, and Ksuvim traditionally was read in the afternoon by Shabbos Mincha. So you can bet, I'm willing to bet that the Ksuvim that was read by Shabbos Mincha parallel the themes that were read in the morning, Shabbos morning. However, we know that Chazal abolished reading Ksuvim by Shabbos Mincha because people did not come to the rabbi's drasha. In those days, the Rabbanim used to give Musar, or used to teach important halachas Shabbos afternoon. And because Chazal preempted them by being a takana to read Kisuvim Shabbos afternoon, people would go to the Navi Shir and not go to the Rav's halacha and Musar Shir. So Chazal abolished reading Kisuvim in order that people should come to the Rabbanim, but we don't know, it's hidden from us, what exactly they read. It was there a Seder of Kisuvim that was read and studied Shabbos Mincha, and L'chor there was, that would parallel, obviously, the themes that appear in the Torah, which obviously there are so many similarities, and I just like that idea, that's a very interesting idea. Greg, I got write a dissertation on different types of charada, terror. I mean, Yitzchak was terrified, and here Balshetzai was terrified. And the different expressions, different nuances, and it has great deep meaning, obviously. Let's go to Pasuk Zayin. So what happened at this point in time? Kari Malka b'chayil. The king called out with great strength. He issued it was a very loud announcement. It was like a red alert. And the chayil means with strength, and in this context, it has to mean it was a major emergency. Okay, every official, every siren was wailing and roaring and telling everyone we're in trouble. What did the king want? What was the emergency? Le he ola, to bring. Three different expressions: the osh paya, the kas doe, and the vigoz raya. Okay, these are the people who deal with the three different wise men of the nation. Remember, three wise men and the kastoy, we know, are the astrologers, and the oshpaya are those, the magicians, if I'm not mistaken, people who black magic, and the goz raya are the wise men. Three different levels of people that were experienced in different forms of chokhmah, astrology, or magic, speaking to the dead, or general wisdom. They were instructed to be brought to the king to look at the script on the wall, decipher two things. There were two things about the script that were not clear. We're going to see that in detail. They did not know what they did not know how to read the script. They did not recognize the script. Was this Hebrew? Was this Greek? Was this some type of ancient script that no one knew of? They did not know what the script was. Number two, after they'll figure out what the script, what does it mean? What's the significance? It appeared to have been a mystery, even if they would be able to decipher what the words, the letters were. So that we'll see very soon. Over here we have three different types of wise groups of people that were instructed to be brought before the king. Oni Malkov Yamar, the king raised his voice and said, Lechakime Bavel, to the wise men of Bavel. Because the wise men of Bavel is a general term which captures the three expressions, the Ashpaya, the Kastoye, and the Gozraya. Dichol Enosh, he gave them the following incentive. You always need to give incentives if you want to get something done. And what's the best incentive? money and kavod. That's that one. Even one without the other can do it. But certainly, when you have a combination of money and honor, it cannot get better than that. And the king was, even though he lost his mind here at this point in time, he was drunk, and he was terrified that he had enough wisdom to offer the perfect incentive to his people to decipher the handwriting on the wall. And he said as follows, Dichol Enosh, any man, Di Yikre, that will be able to read, Chesava Dina, this script. Anyone who knows how to read the letters, what does it say? And number two, Ufishre Yicha Vi Nani, and can relate its interpretation. Yicha Vi Nani, we had many times, it means to speak, to utter. And in this context, it means to relate, to express. To explain to me, Fishrei means the interpretation of what it says in the wall. So what will be the reward? Three things. Ar givono yilmash, he will wear a purple garment. Now in those days, there was no such thing as wearing purple garments. To wear a purple garment, you had to be, it was a capital offense to wear a purple garment. It was the levush of malchus. We discussed this, that to make a bracha on a king, we discussed this, to make a bracha, shecholak mechvoidoi, shenosal mechvoidoi, shecholak, there's a bracha you make on a melech. So we discussed the President of the United States, is he called a melech? He has power, life and death to pardon. But in the traditional literature of what's called a melech, it's recorded that a melech is someone who has a special type of clothing that the common man is not allowed to wear. Our gamon, purple, was a color that was reserved for the malchus. If a common citizen, a common man, a citizen would wear our gamon, this was a capital offense. You're masquerading in levush. I mean, there's even today, I remember we're hearing on the news that today for a veteran to wear his uniform is illegal. It's a crime. For a veteran today, someone who fought in the United States, any war and has their uniform, to wear their uniform, the only time they're allowed to wear their uniform, if this is written in the laws, is Veterans Day at a parade or some type of commemoration or ceremony on Veterans Day. But throughout the year, if a soldier wants to show up at work wearing his uniform, it's illegal. It could be they could arrest him. I don't think they can arrest him, whatever. But technically, it's a crime. Same thing, to wear our gaman, if you're not part of the malchus, is a crime. So here it means you can be elevated to a very high stature of honor to be able to wear our gaman, purple clothing. It's an indication of a position of authority. V'ham nicha di dehava al tzavrei, a necklace. Okay, I'm not sure what this is. Some type of hamnicha is a necklace of gold will be wrapped around his neck. And that, again, it's a sign of authority, a sign that you're part of the government. V'talti v'malchusa yishlot. And now tachlis, not just covered, you'll give 1/3 of the malchus. That's an incredible incentive. I'll relinquish 1/3 of my malchus to you if you will reveal, you will reveal what this means. Now contrast this. What? Oh, exactly. So what I wanted to say. Contrast this with Esther Hamalka. Achashverosh was willing to give Esther even a half. Chatzi Hamalchus Tinosin Lach. Half Tinosin Lach will be given to Esther Hamalka. He wanted her to reveal her nationality, where she comes from. There was also an incentive. Tell me what I want, and I'll give you half. Here, Baal Shetzar is not as generous; only willing to give 1/3. By the way, what is the significance of 1/3? 1/3 is always considered a miut. It's always considered to be a minority, because until you get to 34%, the balance is always double what you're giving. When you're at 33 1/3. That's the maximum number where the balance is 66, right, and 2/3. 66 and 2/3 is exactly double 33 1/3. Therefore, it's bottle. It's like bottle barov. once you get to 34%, the balance is no longer double. So that's why in halacha, you find this concept in halacha, shlish. Shlish is a very important term in halacha. A third is considered always a niyot. Why is a third considered a niyot? Because the balance is double. Anytime there's someone else has double what you have, you're insignificant. But if someone else just has more than what you have, but it's not double, you're already a player. You're already almost an equal. Okay, 50-50, okay, so you have 50, that's already quality, 100%. But even if you have 65% and I have 35%, it's in my mind and in your mind and in the world's mind, we're equal. We're partners. You have 65, I have 35. So you don't have double than what I have. You have a little bit more. You just have a little bit more, but I have. You're already within range. But if you only have 33 and someone else has 66, you're not in range. He has double what you have. Having double, that's already a different league. So here, Baal Shet Zar is willing to give up part of the Malchus, 33%, but 33 is only still called a need. It's not considered to be a very significant amount. Let's go further. So that was the incentive. Now, before we go further, why was Belshazzar and all of his wise men, as we're going to see, why were they unable to read what it said on the wall in the cipher's message? So Chazal tell us that it was written in Ksav Ashuris. Okay, we'll read the words, we'll get the words of Pasuk Chafei, that's going to be later on. But whatever was written was, now what is Ksav Ashuris? That's the Ksav that's written in our Sefer Torah. When you get an Aliyah, Sefer Torah, everyone here can read Ksav Ashuris, open up a Tikkun. It looks similar to the letters on the page of regular Chumash, black letters. But that was not the common script that was used in those times. There was something called Ksav Ivri. Ksav Ivri, you go look in the encyclopedias. Today it's no one uses Ksav Ivri, it's unheard of. Only place to see Ksav Ivri today is in the museums, and in the back of an encyclopedia, or in some ancient replica of a coin. Ksav Ivri, now the reason why, this is a general idea, maybe we should talk about this idea. That, first of all, there's Machlekes in the Gemara, the Luchos. Which Ksav, which script, when Hashem gave the Torah and wrote, etched the script, the text on the tablets, which script was it, Ksav Ivri or Ksav Ashuris? So it's Machlekes in the Gemara, Sanhedrin, two different opinions. Some want to make a pshara, they want to make a compromise. They want to make a compromise and say that the first set of luchos was given in Ksav Ashuris, and the second set of luchos was written in Ksav Ivri. So being that the second set of luchos, the set that which remains with us, that was not shattered, was Ksav Ivri, that was the primary script that was written. Even the Sifrei Torah in ancient times was written in Ksav Ivri, which is fine. That was the halacha.
And Ezra changed it.
Right, Ezra changed it. Now why did he change it? So let me give you another focus on this issue from another angle. By the German Jews, the Yekas, even Al Hayom Azeh, the very Makbid, I don't know from experience, I'm just saying things that might be, what I'm saying may not be 100% accurate, but I know there's a certain truth to what I'm saying. The very Makbid to give a child two names. You give the child this Hebrew name, Yitzchak ben Avraham, and you give him a secular name, Isaac. Even a name that has no relationship to his Hebrew name. You give a secular name. And in his daily life, this, I don't think even the Yekas do this today. Today already they've converted over to...
In Hungary,
yeah,
before the war,
yeah,
just about all the Hungarian Jews had secular names.
Okay, right.
Leopold,
it wasn't because they needed to do business, so they needed to blend into society. It's much deeper than that.
Poland, what I know, they had no secular.
Okay, it's a different.
In other words, my mother was showing his kids said Chava, Rafa.
Okay, and Chanami. But let's focus on those Jews that did have secular names. So some will tell us, some will tell you, which is true. It all depends where, how, what, when. You have to trace, everything has to be traced to its original source. You want to blend in. You don't want to stick out. You have to make a parnasa. We're in Golus. We're part of a society of non-Jews. You have to blend in. You don't want to stick out. You don't want to provoke anti-Semitism. So you have to have a name. Not everyone has to know that you're Jewish. And al pi halacha, you don't necessarily need to wear a yarmulke when you go to work. You don't have to cover your head. Only when you make a bracha, only when you eat, only make, when you make a bracha and you eat, when you daven. So there is an approach, a very legitimate approach to observance of Yadus, to hatzneah lecha simelokecha. Tznius for men. Don't stick out. Don't walk around with your pious out and a long beard and a big yarmulke and speak Yiddish and do everything in your flavor of Judaism. It's like a thorn in the eyes of your environment. Okay, that's one approach. But there's another approach. And the other approach is no. Let's say you're in a society where there is no anti-Semitism. Like certain countries, China, they say in China, I read an article, China, Hong Kong, Esav, son of Yaakov, is only among descendants of Esav. There are other countries where we don't find today there's such hatred, there's misunderstanding, but it's not the same type of anti-Semitism. There may be some trace of it, but it's a little bit different. Let's say you live in an environment where they'll accept it. You can be religious. You can wear your payas and your beard and a yarmulke and do whatever you want. And you can have Hebrew names. But there was a deliberate choice by many Jews not to use a Hebrew name, to use a secular name. Why? Because it's disgraceful to the sanctity of your Hebrew name. Yitzchak ben Avraham is Kodesh Kodashim. It's sacred. How can you take that name, Yitzchak ben Avraham, and write it on a contract, in a bank contract for a mortgage to buy a house? How can you defile the sanctity of such a holy name? You person carries the name Yitzchak ben Avraham. That's a reminder of Yitzchak Avinu, Yaakov Avram Avinu. How can you defile it by writing it on some mundane document and having your mail have your name and it's thrown in the garbage and it appears here and appears? It's disgraceful. So there was a deliberate attempt to only use holy things for holy purposes. When you get an aliyah, you come to the Beis HaKnesses, the Beis HaMedrash, marriage, things like that, then you use your holy name. Now, what's the problem with that? The problem with that is a person can forget that he's a Jew. If you only use your Hebrew name when you come to shul, once on Shabbos, or whatever it is, you can slide into a frame of mind like the goyim. I'm just a regular goy. I don't have anything sacred. There's nothing really sacred about my life. You know, once a week I go to shul. I'm reminded of my sanctity of the kedusha that does exist. So there are those that fully disagree. They hold that you should always use your whenever you can show your Jewishness, do it in order to elevate you, to remind you and sanctify yourself even in the most mundane situations. But here's the trick, it's a trade-off. Each approach is not perfect. Because if you always use, you show and display your Jewishness, it's inevitable that you're going to defile it to a large degree. You get too used to it. It doesn't have any special meaning after a while. It will be defiled to a certain degree. But the advantage is it will lift you up. It will lift up mundane situations and take you to a higher level of spirituality. So whatever you do is not good. It's a trade-off. Some want to focus. It's better to defile the sacred nature of Judaism in most mundane situations in order to lift us up from our lowly state. And some are of the opinion that no, only use your Jewishness at holy moments in order not to defile its sanctity, and in order that you should get the most bang for your buck at those holy times, and you should fully appreciate, and during other times of your life, you shall use more, you should focus on things that are more secular. All of this is rooted in Ezra and Ksav HaShuris. Because originally, Ksav HaShuris, the Klal Yisrael, before the time of Ezra, during the time of the Bayis Rishon, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, Ksav HaShuris is Kodesh Kodosh. The letters of the Aleph Beis, the way they appear in the Sefer Torah, with the Tagin, and with every single nuance, is holy of holy. And it's not right for you on a daily basis to open up your, say you open up a siddur, and you, some svarim, they have the psukim Ksav HaShuris. Even a Sefer Torah, how dare you write Ksav HaShuris in the Sefer Torah? That Ksav is designated for the Luchos. The Luchos, Hashem, He created the world with those letters. Hashem gave the Torah with those letters. But even a Sefer Torah in Shul, you're defiling the sanctity of Ksav HaShuris, to write a Sefer Torah in that script. And therefore, it was reserved only for very special occasions, very special. Everything else in Klal Yisrael, they used Ksav Ivri. However, Niskatnu Hadoiras, the generations, as we get more distant from Matan Torah, the level of our spiritual charge was greatly diminished. We needed a boost. And to boost us spiritually, we had to take things that are super, super sacred and introduce it into our mundane lives. What's the trade-off? The trade-off is, it's defiled. So when we have this, Sefer Torah, Ksav HaShuris, everyone appreciates, this is a Sefer Torah. Look at the letters. This costs $50,000. The person who has to write this has to be, there's a great degree of sanctity. But by bringing that sanctity down to the ordinary daily life, even in the Beis HaKnesses, and certainly in a Siddur and a Chumash, and so on and so forth, it loses its specialness. And so this was a transition point in the history of Klal Yisrael. Until the time of Ezra, people were on such a high level, they were able basically to act like the German Jews. You have a Hebrew name, and you have a secular name. When you come to the Beis HaKnesses, you put on your yarmulke, you use your Hebrew name, it's a holy moment. You feel the sanctity. When you go into the business world, you're a Jew inside, you're Yerei Shemayim. But you don't defile your sanctity with using Jewish symbols which are extremely sacred in a secular environment. That's the whole Klal Yisrael pretty much behaved in this fashion until the time of the Bayis Sheni. And that's why the only script that was ever used was Ksav Ivri, a mundane script, or more mundane script. But then Niskatnu Hadaros. The whole approach to Judaism in the time of the Bayis Sheni became more like the Polish approach. You have to be as Jewish as possible at all points in time, even though we're not holding there. The average person is not holding by understanding the significance of Pais and a big yarmulke and a beard and wearing a long frock. We're holding by this. However, you have to do these things. The understanding of the B'nai Torah is, you're right, you're not holding by wearing a black hat. Who are you to wear a black hat? To wear a big black hat? This is someone who's a Yerei Shemayim, puts on a black hat. So the understanding is, it's right, you're not holding weight, but hopefully it'll rub off. You have to aspire for higher things. And even though in the process of aspiring to higher things, the whole meaning of a black hat is a joke. Because this guy wears a black hat, this menuvel, this ganaf, and this meshugna, he wears, you're disgracing what it means to wear a black hat. Doesn't matter. Hopefully by him wearing the black hat, maybe now he's a ganef, maybe in 2 years from now he'll already be an honest person, he will aspire to greater things. So you defile the sanctity of holy symbols as in an attempt to bring you higher. That Ashkafa was introduced at the time of the Bayis Sheni, at the time of Ezra, and it's happening here for the very first time. When they are seeing on the wall the Ksav Ashuris, they're now seeing, what is Ksav Ashuris? What is this script? No one saw. You know why no one saw before? Because this was the Ksav that was used for the Luchos. And no one would dare take that script and use it for their own personal Sifrei Torah. It's too sacred. Times have changed. Niskadnu Hadoros. It's a new Hashkafa. We're now going to introduce, take this, Hashem is saying, take my holy things, defile it, in order to bring you higher. And that's what's happening with the Ksav Ashuris, and that's why Ezra is going to introduce, pretty much based upon this. This was a sign from heaven. Times have changed. Ezra is going to change the script of Ksav Ashuris, and it all follows from there. But at this point in time, they did not understand it, because no one knew what Ksav Ashuris was. They were at the transition point. Okay, that's one approach. Another important thing to note is that even though they will understand the Ksav Ashuris, then we're going to see that that's going to be to decipher. The letters were written in a code. It was impossible to, they were not written across, they were written down. In order to understand what it said, you had to go read the word, the letters going down, not going across. What's the significance of that? That will come to later on. Or the other interpretations, you had to skip every, like the codes. Today, all the different, the codes. What? He couldn't read. Even if they can figure out what the script was, someone could inform this is the Ksav Ashuris, but they did not understand the meaning. And the reason why they did not understand the meaning is because could not read it from right to left. You had to read it from top going down. That's one opinion. Other opinion said that you had to skip letters. It was written in one continuous form, and you had to read every sixth letter. Like the codes in the Sefer Torah, we know all these things. You skip every 50 letters, every this letters, you'll find different codes, then you rearrange the parsha, and you can find all these secrets, so on and so forth. That's a controversial topic in and of itself. Okay, so this is what is happening here. Baal Shetzar is promising all of the wise men to read with three gifts. They are incentives. They cannot decipher what it meant because of the sacred nature of the Ksav Ashuris. And we'll pick up the Mishnah tomorrow, Pasuk Ches, of how this story plays out.